Krishna spoke about many, many things in the second chapter. And in the second chapter, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Prabhupada explains in the purport. So this is a summary of the entire content of the Bhagavad Gita. Because the Vedas were briefly described, the modes of material nature, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Sankhya Yoga, Karma Kanda, Buddhi Yoga, Vedanta, the Atma, Bhakti Yoga, detachment, Samadhi, and Sannyas. But especially, Krishna spoke about Buddhi Yoga, or the necessity for Buddhi or intelligence. But also, because if one doesn't act in Buddhi Yoga, one will become entangled in the material world. So Buddhi Yoga was a way to free oneself from all entanglement in the material world. And yet Arjuna was being asked to fight. Krishna told him to fight in so many different ways. But yet he was stressing non-entanglement through intellectual Buddhi Yoga. So Arjuna was confused. Not that Krishna's instructions were confusing, or that Krishna meant to confuse Arjuna, but Arjuna didn't know what he should do, because it appeared that acting would entangle him in the material world, and Krishna was stressing not to be entangled in the material world, but yet he was pushing him to act. So therefore, in the first verse, Arjuna said, Yayasi chet kamanaste matta buddhir janardana tat kim karmani gaurimam yo yasi keshava. Why do you engage me? O Janardan. Because Janardan means, why are you giving trouble to someone who is your follower? O Keshava. Keshava means you are the controller of Brahma. Okay? And Lord Shiva. So I have to follow what you say because you are the supreme controller. But I'm not sure what you want me to do. Why do you want to engage me in this gore mam karmani? In this ghastly, gore means ghastly war. In this ghastly activities, if you think that buddhi, intelligence, or buddhi, mata buddhi janadana, if you think that intelligence, because Krishna has stressed buddhi yoga so much, is better than karma, especially this ghastly karma. So this is a typical type of confusion that someone has, that they think that spiritual life means the giving up of all activities. And I have to become a complete renunciant to be completely spiritual. So this is what Krishna is going to explain to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, that one can even be fully on the spiritual path, even if one is a warrior in the battlefield doing what one generally would think is the most ghastly or difficult thing, or fighting and killing. So if the goal is to be stitta pragya, or to be fixed in consciousness, then why do you want me to fight? So Prabhupada explains in the purport. Arjuna also thought of Krishna consciousness, or Buddhi Yoga, or intelligence and spiritual advancement of knowledge, as something like retirement from active life and the practice of penance and austerities at a secluded place. In other words, he wanted to skillfully avoid the fighting by using Krishna consciousness as an excuse. But as a sincere student, he placed the matter before his master and questioned Krishna as to his best course of action. In answer, Lord Krishna elaborately explained Karma Yoga, or work in Krishna consciousness, in this third chapter. So Krishna It's always going to ask from the second verse, and then starting in the third verse, and the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth, Krishna is going to speak on one level. Actually, that comes later. He's going to explain some general principles first in reply. But here he says, my intelligence is bewildered by your equivocal instruction. He's telling me to practice Bhuti Yoga and telling me to fight. Equivocal means going in two different directions. Therefore, please tell me decisively which will be most beneficial for me. Tad ekam vada nischitya. Ekam, tell me one thing, not two things. Not gyan and renunciation to get, because the purpose of gyan is to get knowledge, is to get knowledge of the soul. That's what Krishna spoke about in the beginning of the chapter. And then if you want me to do that, then why are you telling me that I should kill people and my relatives? So please decisively, tarikam vada nischitya, please tell me one thing. Ekam, only one thing, not two things. So this is talking about two different kinds of, well, Krishna explains in the next verse. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. What does that mean? Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Yes. He's speaking. Krishna is going to speak. Bhagavan is speaking. Bhagavan means he who possesses all opulences, who is full of all, everything that makes someone fortunate, he has an ocean of that, in qualities, and in abilities, and in wealth, and etc. So Krishna says, Lokesmin dvividha nishta, that in this world, Lokesmin, that dvividha, there's two different divisions of nishta, of fixedness, or faith, as Prabhupada translates it here. There's two different kinds of people who have different fixednesses. Puraprokta maya nagaha jnana yogena sankhyanam karma yogena yoginam. So one type of person is the jnana yogi. He's fixed in his jnana and his renunciation. Sankhyanam. The sankhya and jnana are basically the same. And the second kind, because he's saying dvividha, there are two kinds. Second kind is karma yogena yoginam. Those who are fixed in karma yoga or devotional service can be translated, because we'll explain that this, as Krishna's going to explain, actually, there's two kinds of karma yoga. And because the goal ultimately is what Krishna's really talking about is the devotional karma yoga. Prabhupada always translates it as bhakti yoga. But there's actually two kinds of karma yoga. One type of karma yoga, as Krishna is going to describe, is just you're working and doing your duty and you're detached from the result. This is what Krishna wants Arjuna to do. Because all of Arjuna's worries and anxieties were about what's going to happen when I fight. The result is going to be horrible. So Krishna is going to push him to do karma yoga, where one is detached from the fruits of one's work. Just simply detached. One does dutifully acts, and whatever happens, happens. But there's another type of karma yoga, which is the ultimate goal of karma yoga, that first kind where you're just detached leads to liberation, because it's so sattvic in the mode of goodness. It leads to liberation, freedom from the material world. But the second type of karma yoga, which happens by the grace of the Lord's devotees and by the association of devotees, is when one is detached, not only detached from the fruit of one's work, when one is doing one's duty, but one offers the fruit to Krishna. So one is detached, but more than detached, one is detached for oneself, but attached to Krishna. And therefore, the fruit of one's work is being offered to Krishna. So that's the kind of yoga, kind of karma yoga, that Krishna is actually instructing Arjuna and all the souls in the material world to do. To perform your duty in a detached way from the fruit, and those fruits should be offered to Krishna. Krishna is going to explain this later in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. He says, yat karosi rasnasi, yat chahosi dhatiyat, yat tapasyat svikantaya, yat chahosi, that you give everything to me, everything, all the austerities and sacrifices, etc., that you do, all the work, you should offer the results to me. That is practical definition of karma yoga. You should do it in such a way that I am pleased. You're working on my behalf. You should work for me, on my behalf. And I'll take care of you, don't worry. You take what you need, but you work for me. Don't work just so you can enjoy and enjoy and enjoy and enjoy. Because if you try to enjoy and enjoy and enjoy and enjoy, you're going to suffer and suffer and suffer and suffer. Because it's the very nature of the material world. The attempt to enjoy, you think, brings enjoyment. So it's like if I'm attempting to walk from here to here, you think that the result is of my attempt is that I get to where I want. So you think if I'm trying to get enjoyment, the result would be enjoyment. But exactly, it's just the opposite. The result of the attempt, the journey to enjoyment on the material level, is dukkha yona evite, suffering. So anyway, Krishna explains this, the nishtha of one practicing karma yoga, the fixedness and detached work. Two different types of spirit. So he says in this third verse, the Supreme Personality of God had said, O sinless Arjuna, I've already explained that there are two classes of men who try to realize the self. Some are inclined to understand it by empirical philosophical speculation, that's the Jnanam and Sankhya, and the others by Karma Yoga or devotional service. So the problem with practicing Karma Yoga, and Krishna's going to, problem with practicing Jnana Yoga, or being completely detached and renounced from the world, because Krishna says there's two paths. Karma yoga, where you're completely detached, and jnana yoga, sankhya yoga, where you're completely attached, and karma yoga, where you have some attachment, but you can work in a detached way. And the result of practicing karma yoga is detachment, and the result of practicing the jnana yoga is liberation. That's the basic idea. And of course, when devotion enters into it, and one is practicing bhakti yoga or karma yoga, where the fruits are offered to Krishna, and the result is neither gyan or liberation, but it's love for Krishna. So there's different stages. Is that clear? Clear? So, if one attempts to be renounced, and this is practically the main point that Krishna is going to make in this section, in this chapter that's called Karma Yoga, that if one is trying to be renounced, But one doesn't have a completely pure heart, one's going to get oneself in so much trouble. So Krishna is recommending not complete renunciation, but renunciation of the fruit of one's work, not of the activity. That's the important point, because Arjuna, as Prabhupada said in that first verse, is trying to leave the battlefield and give up the activity to become a renunciant. But Krishna is telling him that actually you don't have the capacity, you're a warrior. You're not going to become a renunciant. You have too much energy in it flowing through your system. So Krishna says in text 3 that there are two kinds of people, or different nishtas or fixednesses or faiths. One is renunciation and the other is activity. Then Krishna says, but not by merely abstaining from work can one achieve freedom from reaction. It's not that just stopping working you're going to free yourself from reactions. Nor by renunciation alone can one attain perfection. Everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he has acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment, because it's the very nature of the soul to be active. And if you're tinged by the modes of material nature, you're not going to be able to be renounced and sit in and meditate all day long. You're not going to be able to do it. And that's not even the perfection anyway, because the perfection of that type of renunciation is to be free from the modes of material nature. And then ultimately the perfection of being freed from the modes of material nature is to serve Krishna on the transcendental platform. So if you try to do that intermediary stage of Jnana Yoga, but you're not qualified or pure of the heart or completely in the mode of goodness, you'll get yourself in so much trouble, because you'll have given up your duties, but you're forced to act by the modes of material nature, and your activities therefore will be improper. So therefore Krishna explains that one kamendriyani samyamya yaraste manasa smaran indriyartan vamudatma mitya chara sa uchite. Mitya chara. So if you try to give up all your activities thinking that that's what spiritual is, but you're thinking all the time in your mind about actions and doing things, then you're called mityachar, which means false actor or pretender. So therefore the sixth verse is, one who restrains the senses of action but whose mind dwells on the sense object certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. So this is the main point that Krishna is making, is that you should act, Arjuna. Don't think that you should give up your activities, because that's what Arjuna wanted to do. He wanted to give up fighting in the battle. Krishna is telling you, you must act. But you should act, ultimately he's going to say, on the jnana platform with detachment. So you put the two together, karma and jnana, and that's called niskam karma yoga, or actions that are detached from the fruit of one's work. And when that is the perfection of that is when the work and the actions, not only the work, excuse me, the fruit and the work are both done for the pleasure of Krishna. That's the perfection. Because we can work, we do what we want, and then we can keep the fruit, or we can do what we want to do and then keep part of the fruit and give Krishna part of the fruit, or we could do what we want and renounce all the fruit to Krishna, or we can start our offering to Krishna not only when the fruit comes, but before we start the work, and say, Krishna, this is what you want me to do. I'm your servant, now I'm doing it, and of course, as your servant, the fruits are also yours. So there's different levels, quite a few. There was four that we just mentioned, different levels of working. And the first one, where you keep everything for yourself, is of course non-devotional. The second one, where you give Krishna something, is a kind of karma yoga, when you have material desires, sakam. And then when you're completely detached, but you do what you want to do, that's called, you're attached to doing a particular duty, that's called, that's karma yoga on the nishkam level, nishkam karma yoga. And then when you're neither attached to your particular work or to the fruit of the work, but your attachment is for Krishna's pleasure, that is called bhakti. Got it? Is this more difficult than mathematics or easier?
Easier.
Good.
So the most important point that Krishna is making here is that you should act. Don't give up acting and then think about all the things you could be doing, because that will happen if your heart isn't pure. Otherwise, you'll just be a little bit pretentious.
On the other hand, this is what you should do. If a sincere person tries to control the active senses by the mind, and he begins karma yoga in Krishna consciousness without attachment, he is by far superior. So this is karma yoga on the nishkam platform. Perform your duty. For doing so is better than not working. One cannot even maintain one's physical body without work. So karma yatra pichate na prasidye akarmana. It's better to work because it's the nature of the soul to be active. Better to do that. So this is the summary. That eighth verse is the summary of what Krishna wants to say. Now he's going to answer the question, well, what happens if you want to work? We've accepted what Krishna says, that it's better to work than to not work. And it's better to be detached, completely detached from the fruit of one's work. But what happens if you have desires still and you're not quite on that level? So Krishna's going to explain that you should do your duties and still do your duties, because detachment will come from attached work. Attached work will lead to detached work. So he says, and this is described in the next seven verses, work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. So you do your things for Krishna's pleasure, you work for Krishna's pleasure. Otherwise, work causes bondage in this material world. Therefore, O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duty for his satisfaction. And in this way, you will always remain free from bondage. So this is the higher level of nishkam karma. But if one is attached, Krishna says, in the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods along with sacrifices for Vishnu and blessed them by saying, be thou happy by this yajna sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. So you get what you want. If you do your prescribed duties and you try to please Krishna, you'll get what you require and your desires will be fulfilled, and in addition you'll become gradually detached and become on the nishkam platform. even if you you're on the Sakam platform, where you have material desires, by working for the pleasure of Vishnu, and that's called sacrifice. So these verses here describe that platform of working, how that works. The demigods, being pleased by sacrifices, will also please you. And thus, by cooperation between men and demigods, prosperity will reign for all. You'll get everything if you perform your duties, and it's specific here in the Vedic culture, in the realm of Vedic sacrifices, but the same general principle is true. If you work as a sacrifice for Vishnu, then you'll get your needs met by the mercy of Krishna, by the mercy of the devatas, and also you'll satisfy your desires, and also Krishna will be pleased, and also you'll become purified. All these will go on. What do you think? So this is one level of working.
Working that level.
This level, it even gets harder soon, because this is to bring you to the detached platform.
It's difficult to accept it practically, like, you know, say, okay, no, you accept that, you know, my needs will be met if I walk this way.
But the point is that in practical life, say I have a job. So there's one level where you have love for Krishna, and you understand that you have a duty to perform, and you to say to take care of your family or something like that in Krishna's service. So you want to make the devotees, and you want to preach in that, and this is your prescribed duty, and you're doing everything simply for the pleasure of Krishna. Then another level, so you work, you take what you need. It's not like you give everything to Krishna and then you expect your food to grow out of the carpet. You take what you need. You take what you need. But you don't just try to accumulate, thinking that then I'll be happy and then I'll be safe. You're a servant of Krishna, and you think you're living your life for him, so how can I live it in such a way? He's the boss of your family, and how could you manage it on his behalf? So if you take too much from the boss, it's not right, but if you don't take what you need, that's also not practical. So then a level below that is, I'm attached to this work. It's my family instead of Krishna's family, and my business. But I'll give it, I'm working, and I'll take what I need, and everything else is for Krishna. But there's a sense of ownership over the business and the family. And then another level, one lower level, is, this is my family, this is my work, I want to be detached, but I have desires, and I need certain things, I need my Mercedes-Benz and my helicopter that flies me to my own airplane. And, so okay, but I'm a devotee, so let me give what I can to Krishna. And then the next level is I'm not giving anything to Krishna. It's too bad. He can take care of himself. So you can find a level that is suitable for you in your consciousness. But one should understand that the attachments in the material world, it's cause difficulty. It's not it's all the same, but attachments in the material world cause so much difficulty. Because then there's always so much fear, there's almost, you have to control everything, and you can't control everything. And then you have to leave it behind, and it leaves you behind, and Lakshmi is always Chantal, and this problem and that problem, and just the material world isn't a place for permanency, and we long for security here. So we act on whatever level our capacity is, according to our level of nishta. That was the point of two basic ways. And we don't try to pretend, but we should know that we should get purified also. It's in our interest to become purified. Now, okay, so how does that... So what did you say before? You said it was difficult to act on this level. You have to find a level that's suitable for you.
Yeah.
And then from that point go forward. And not pretend. Because if you try to be much more than you are, you'll end up having difficulty. But if you try to be less than you are, you'll lose what you do have.
Basically, just try and give whatever extra that you have for Krishna.
At least. But because of course the tendency in the material world is no such thing as extra, because Krishna wants everything and the material energy also wants everything. So whether you think it's extra or not, you dutifully have to give, and you see that even though you think, oh, I could have done this, I could have done that. No, this is my duty by Krishna's grace. Something is coming to me, so I must, every time something comes into my hand, I must give at least something to Krishna.
So, would engaging the family into Krishna consciousness, would that be for Krishna's service as well?
Well, you should. Well, that's ideal if you can do that. You act in such a way in your family and that the whole family becomes devoted. But not only that, but setting a good example and being happy and Krishna conscious itself and keeping the house clean and acting in a way that naturally the Krishna consciousness is transmitted. Keeping the culture in the family, the Krishna conscious culture. When I did research for writing a book on teaching, I was studying how Krishna consciousness could be passed on in like a school. And I thought that the closest thing to that was how can ethics means values, what you value, to be honest, be this, be that, be that, be this. All the ethics, how would you translate? How would you describe ethics? Values, morals. So I thought that was quite similar to Krishna consciousness in a way, somewhat parallel. So I did some research from one quite a famous educator who was in Melbourne University. And they've tried many, many different ways to teach ethics in school. They used to teach what they call situation ethics. Do they teach ethics in your school?
It depends. Now they don't in my school. Like the school I went to, when I was there, they used to teach us. But now, once we left, the other boys are very disciplined, so they don't teach them.
Yeah. There's no need. Are you trying to say that you were naughty? Your group was naughty?
Yeah.
No, that's hard to believe. Maybe not so hard to believe. Are you naughty sometimes?
Yeah.
Probably. No. Yeah? Is it true?
I
used to be naughty. No?
No,
sober. Very good. So, but what I meant by teaching ethics is that they used to have classes specifically on how to be good and you know, what's good and what's bad and why you should be good. And they had many, many different ways to teach ethics too. They tried so many ways because nothing was working. Mm-hmm. So first thing is they just say everyone should be good. And, you know, they say if you're bad, you're going to get in trouble and that. So did that work?
No.
Okay. Then they had this thing called situation ethics. They'd make up little stories. Like this person, his wife was very ill. And there was one man who had the medicine that would cure his wife. But he wanted to charge $100,000 for it, and this poor fellow didn't have any money. Now, what would ethically be correct for him to do? Because if he couldn't afford it, would it be ethical for him to steal the medicine to give it to save his wife's life? So then they'd give these really hard questions to figure out what's right and what's wrong, and they'd have the students discuss that. Hoping that the children would start to think about what's right and what's wrong. And they found that there was no transference. It means there was no, all the discussions in the particular about the different situations, there was no transference into the behavior of the students. And then one thing they tried was actually, that was quite interesting, is that they would have philosophical discussions in the classroom about philosophers, but the students would do all the discussion. They would make points and they would talk to each other more than the teacher. That was quite effective. But the most effective thing they found out that influences the students to be moral. Are you going to leave now, right when I'm going to tell you the answer? Okay. There's a whole chapter.
Sorry.
That's okay. It was that the behavior of the teachers and the atmosphere in the school, because whatever the values in the school were being acted out, that's what the students picked up. So if you valued being kind to people, and a student was having difficulty and the teachers were kind to him, the students would learn that. And if there was a difference between what was said and how people acted, they would learn how they acted, not what they said. And then, a good example is like, there's this big kid in the school beating up some little kid, right? And then the teacher walks over and then hits him. I said, I told you never to hit anyone smaller than you, like that. That's the typical one. So the exact opposite message is given from what he's saying. So very, very interesting. So if you want to make your family Krishna conscious, which was the point, means that you have to act in a Krishna conscious way. Whatever values that you have will be transmitted not by your words but by your actions. So you have to have devotion for Krishna if you want to teach devotion. Yes, much louder.
I remember we had a headmaster his wife. He had followed after a popular headmaster. And he had many manners and sort of we thought were quite mean. And one time he had to take me and somebody else to a train station. He dropped us off at the train station to catch the train.
Yeah.
I can't remember the sequence, but somehow or other he cheated on the I told him I figured out something like that. And I remember that we hated him for that. Like, he's all the time telling us to stand in line and do this and do that and do this. And then when he went to get the ticket, he told a lie. And it was like, to us, it was like the worst possible thing he could ever do.
And it confirmed.
Yeah, it confirmed why we hated him.
Gave you all the justification.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not listening to him anymore. I think I even wrote him a nasty letter.
Talking to Rainy. You did.
I really didn't like him. I told him, you know, what you can do.
And what did he say?
I was already out of school.
Oh, then it's okay.
Rebellious for stage.
How old were you?
17, 18.
How old are you?
19.
Oh, you're already past that rebellious stage. That's good. Long past it. Very good. In charge of the various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of yajna sacrifice, will supply all necessities to you. But he who enjoys such gifts without offering them to the demigods in return is certainly a thief. In other words, if you're taking from Krishna or the demigods, and you don't give something back, then stena eva, you're a thief. Like, you can take things from a store, but you have to give something back. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is offered first for sacrifice. Others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment verily eat only sins. All living bodies subsist on food grains, which are produced from rains. Rains are produced by performance of yajna, sacrifice, and yajna is born of prescribed duties. So Krishna's system, the Vedic system, always made you feel that you were dependent on others. To gain what you wanted, you have to approach another, someone in a more higher position, and perform sacrifice and please them. So this was the Vedic system. But in contemporary world, they don't want you to depend on people. You should become independent. So this type of mentality, subtle as it is makes it so much more difficult to be a devotee, to be pious, to believe in God, to serve God, because it all depends on you. It doesn't depend on anyone else's blessings, or you don't need anyone else to benedict you with anything. If you desire it enough, you'll get it. You'll be able to do it. And if you don't get what you want, it just means that your desire isn't strong enough, and there's something wrong with you. But actually, if every person who desired to be a billionaire was a billionaire, then what? A lot more people, less people at the Centrelink anyway. I mean, it's not that just by desire it all happens. There's so much. Desire is one element of it, but deserving is another, and karma is another. So the Vedic system, the whole way from the bottom to the top, was a way of molding the consciousness so that you could gradually or quickly learn to love Krishna. That was the Vedic system. So even at the very beginning stages, all the dealings were favorable for giving yourself to Krishna. Even if you weren't on that level yet, at least they weren't unfavorable. So even how to maintain yourself, you perform sacrifice. So immediately you're learning the art of pleasing the superior. The family life, please the superior. But nowadays, no one wants to please anyone. Yeah, everyone thinks that they're the center and everyone should please me. Did you used to think like that when you were going through your naughty period?
Yeah.
Really?
Has to be a big bully.
You used to beat up
bully.
Used to beat up those who are bigger than you or smaller than you? Everyone. Bigger, smaller. You're equal to everyone. So Krishna is he's gonna conclude the section in text 16. Regulated activities are prescribed in the Vedas, and the Vedas are directly manifested from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Consequently, the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. This is actually a very interesting point. I want to say that the very act of performing the sacrifice, the ritual, so to speak, Krishna is present in that. So he's present in the system, he's present as the person making the offering, he's present as the result. It all becomes completely spiritualized in the act of sacrifice. And then, my dear Arjun, one who does not follow in human life the cycle of sacrifice thus established in the Vedas certainly leads a life full of sin. Living only for the satisfaction of the senses, such a person lives in vain. In other words, he's not making use of his human life. So in the Vedic concept, everyone should try to go as high as they can in their life. Not just materially, because that's what today's concept is that everyone should materially advance as high as they can, but the result of that is ultimately everyone loses, because you lose everything material on the material level. But the Vedic system is that you advance in consciousness as high as you can. That was the emphasis. And that is eternally yours. Whatever advancement you make is eternally yours. Whatever purification you get, whatever freedom from the modes of material nature you get, whatever love for Krishna you develop, it's yours forever, and you'll pick up from there next time. You evolve, so the evolution is on the consciousness level, and the consciousness dictates the physical level too, of course. So what that section was basically about the process of sacrifice for those who are attached and want something as a result of their work. So they get it in such a way that will purify them. That's the basic idea, and bring them higher in consciousness. Okay, any questions or comments? A couple of minutes. So the art and the difficulty is transferring this, and this is what Prabhupada really, really did in his Bhagavad Gita as it is. He generalized the principle and showed how to do it for those who are not living in the Vedic culture. He made it practical on the contemporary level. Because the basic Bhagavad Gita is spoken for those who are in the Vedic culture, who are living according to the Vedic regulations, who are Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras, who are performing sacrifice, but none of those things, practically speaking, exist in a regulated way today. So how to adjust these principles so that it's true to what Krishna is saying, but not fully following it, which is from a different time and a different culture, different circumstance. Huh?
Out of place.
Well, it's just not there.
Yeah.
So Prabhupada really did that in it. So how to take the principles, the essence. That's what the Paramahansa can do. He extracts the essence. And because it's a question of relevance, that's the word. Because we could say that everyone should follow the Vedic system, but everyone, no one could do it, and it's not at all possible. So there's no relevance if that's all that the message is. So Prabhupada made the Bhagavad Gita extremely relevant and practical. Any questions or comments? Are you clear about everything?
Just try and do as much as we can. Because since we have limited stuff, like for me, I'm working. But otherwise.
But you should also associate, make sure you associate with devotees. Because if you don't associate with devotees and hear sastra and do some service, then it's very difficult to do as much as you can. Gradually, as much as you can, will get less and less and less and less, because you have to always be hearing of the different stages and what the ideal is, and tasting the sweetness of higher consciousness, you know, getting a glimpse of that. Otherwise, the consciousness will just go down.
What if I'm in a place where there aren't many devotees or there are no devotees?
Then you should start preaching. Create devotees. Pray that Krishna sends you some. But why would you be in a place where there are no devotees?
Well, when I come back, I'm in the town I've been living in.
Well, you have a preaching center. You can be the president of the temple, and you can be the
bouncer.
Huh? The bouncer. The temple bully. Bouncer. He does look like the bouncer type, doesn't he? When you think about it.
That's the troublemaker.
Yeah. One time we were in, I've told this story many times, but not with you around. I was in a Chinese city called Wuxi, and it's actually the cartoon animation capital of China. And devotees have a studio, an animation studio, and things like that. Even some devotees. So in any case, there was only a few devotees there, maybe 10 or 12 or 15 devotees, and they were almost all old ladies. So I was thinking, what will I do here when I was there? And I asked the old ladies. Started asking them questions: have they ever been to Vrindavan? How did they come to Krishna consciousness? And then one of the ladies said, to a translator, they couldn't speak any English. One of the ladies said that her husband wasn't a devotee. So she said that they moved to a part of town where there were no devotees, and she thought that Krishna wouldn't put me in a place where there were no devotees. So then she started praying to Krishna to show her who the nearby devotees were. And then she pointed to two or three other old ladies around her and said, "Oh, and Krishna showed me these. And now we have kirtan together every night."
Wow.
So, and what I understood that she was saying, in a very humble way, was that she preached to them. Because she was saying that, because she didn't say that she was made them into devotees, but it was clear that, you know, they weren't already devotees, chanting and things like that. So by her association, they became devotees. That's how a devotee takes to send me. So that's one way to look at it. The old Chinese people in Wuxi can think like that, and so simple and faithful. What village is this?
It's called Nagur. It's 2 hours drive from Nairobi. So I can go at least once a month to the temple in Nairobi. Like, I'm not sure how, because we like I'll probably be busy Monday to Sunday.
Monday to Sunday, that doesn't leave you much time, does it? That's 7 days a week.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure if it will be all the time or not. So I'll try and move whatever I can.
But then, if you're only busy doing business, which isn't a wise thing, obviously, why put yourself in that situation? But if you're only in that situation, and then you have to use your business, Christian service. If that's all you have, that's all you can do. Otherwise, you'll go completely down in consciousness, and you'll forget all about Krishna. And then you'll find yourself an old man one day and think, what have I gained?
So like I've got plenty of books which I keep reading.
Yeah.
That keeps me going.
And tapes, there's ways to do it?
Yeah.
Tapes.
I listen to Prabhupada's like the morning, I listen to Prabhupada's books,
but you can hear Prabhupada's lectures, there's so many things to do. And the devotees, and you start preaching in the village there and ask the devotees to come. And have kirtan in your house and stuff like that. So many things you could do. The problem is always lack of sincerity. So we have to associate with those who are more sincere than us. If we do that, then we'll be okay. And if we don't, Why will you be living there? That's where your father's business is?
Yeah,
okay, so are your parents devotionally inclined?
My mother is not towards ISKCON, but towards Jainism.
Yeah.
So my grandmother, she has her own temple, she takes care of my mother.
Yeah. But on the Jain side?
On the Jain side, yeah. And not as much as what I've been doing now.
Yeah. Bhagavad Gita is your gift.
If I have water city, I asked her to read Bhagavad Gita, she said, I don't want to read that. Her mind is inside, what a city of Gujarat.
Yeah.
She cares, I'll send with him to listen.
How many more days before you go back?
One week. I'll be going on Sunday. Many nights.
And how long will you be away?
Probably 3 weeks.
And then what will you bring back as a gift for Krishna when you come? Not yet. What?
I think I'm bringing.
Well, you should think. Think of something nice to bring Krishna, but don't try to bring fruit, because they'll take it away from you when you come into the country. Anyway, you should have a family meeting on this point.